Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. The Texas Association of Magicians 2014 convention is now history. We had a great time in Fort Worth, and there were a lot of great acts and talent that we saw, good lectures, and good friends to spend some time with and enjoy a lot of great conversation and some great magic. And today, it's final podcast from the convention, from day four. The only real thing that was going on today as part of the convention was the Diamond Jim Tyler lecture, and that was a very good lecture. In fact, that he went on for a little bit longer than usual, and typically that a lecture might go for an hour, got another 15 minutes or so to sell lecture notes. In this particular case, he went for about an hour and then took about a 15-minute break for sales and then came back and finished another 45 minutes. So it really was a true lecture type of a format that you would normally see at your local club. So it started at 10 and he was over by 12, and then we were all out. Time to check out the hotel. But the people who are on the podcast here today start off with Trixie Bond, who will be the incoming president. Actually, she officially is the president for 2015 Texas Association of Magicians Convention in Austin, Texas, and she talks a little bit about the plans she has to make this an exciting and fun convention then as well, that you should probably make plans to attend now. Next, we get to chat with Scott Hollingsworth about the Magic Island. Now, Scott Hollingsworth, of course, was affiliated with the island since it opened in the early 1980s and was the entertainment director. And he talks a little bit about some of the history and some stories that are kind of funny about the Magic Island, as well as what the future might hold for the Magic Island, if any. We wrap up the podcast here today with Steve Bedwell, who was one of the performers in the close-up show, professional close-up show, as well as giving a lecture, and both of which were outstanding. Steve has not been seen really on the magic convention scene for over a decade, and so he's going to perhaps get back into it. Well, you'll have to listen to this podcast and see what he says. So please enjoy this podcast from the Texas Association of Magicians in Fort Worth, Texas, on the Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and this is day four, the final day of the convention. We've finished the convention. It's been fantastic. We've seen some great shows, some great lectures and everything, and we've also seen the passing of the medal from Bill Irwin, who is the president, to the new president, who is going to be Trixie Bond, and I happen to have her with me then right now. Hi, Trixie.
Hello, Scotto.
And congratulations, I think.
I think so.
Yes. It sounds exciting.
It is exciting.
Tell me about Austin. What's happening next year?
We're looking forward to a very exciting 2015. Our theme is going to be magic, music, weirdness, and women. It's not a theme in just name only.
You're going to follow through with all those in spades.
Yes, it's going to be an absolute experience. Magic. Women will be in one show, all female, featuring Jade, Kristen Lambert, Ally Shelley, some other surprises. It's on the website,
yeah.
taom.org.
Okay.
/2015. Live music throughout the convention. A little weirdness with Brian Brushwood's Scam School.
Right.
Comedy hypnotism one night. And featuring an evening at Esther's Follies.
Now that's
a true theater
experience. Right, with Ray Anderson, who many people have seen or heard about. They may not have seen him, and if you haven't, this would be a unique experience to be able to see not only him, but apparently he's going to have a special magic evening. It's going to be more heavily magic than it is.
You'll get the full flavor of Esther's, but Ray is writing the show to put a couple of extra magic skits in.
Yeah.
So those that know what I'm talking about will know what I'm talking about.
Okay. And this is interesting for those of you, again, who perhaps may have been to New Orleans, can kind of imagine what Bourbon Street is like. It's the 6th Street in Austin is kind of like that. I mean, it's a little bit unusual and different and weird. You got a lot of people wandering about, and the street is closed off during the evening, and they have this picture window then that you can kind of see out to the street. And so that's kind of what's happening in the background, actually, of the theater, of the show.
Right. The magic show, the theater skits incorporate folks off the street.
Yeah.
So it's different every show.
Kind of improvisational.
Yes.
Whoever happens to be walking by. It's very, very fun and very funny. And Ray, those of you who have heard the podcast in the past, you can go back and take a look in the archives and just search Ray Anderson. You can hear my interviews with him. I've had a couple in the past, and he truly is one of my favorite magicians, if not my favorite magician. The guy is
incredible. And you know, Scott, he doesn't perform outside of the venue.
Only in Austin.
Only in Austin, only at Esther's Follies. So if you've been wanting to see Ray Anderson in full action, TAOM 2015 is the place to be.
It's the place to be.
And our rates are low, introductory rates. They go up October 31st, so I encourage everyone that would be interested in a unique experience to go online and register for TAOM, that's Texas Association of Magicians, TAOM.org.
And there will be a link then going to the 2015 for Austin in that case. Yeah, it is like, what, $195, and then it's going up to like $225, and then it's going to go up to $275 towards the end. So, you get a great deal now the sooner you actually register.
So please run this podcast before October 31st.
Oh, it'll be on tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow, that's right. And so, let me ask you about the convention here in Fort Worth. How's this been for you? What have you learned? What's been great? I mean, you've got to have been working with the Austin group behind the scenes and getting this ready, but what have you gotten out of this convention?
Well, it's been a fun and educational convention. I've enjoyed the evening shows with Kevin James and Sonny Fontana.
Right.
And
Ian Varela
was hysterical this evening.
Yeah, as a ventriloquist, the juniors had a magic camp, which is another thing that you guys have in Austin.
Yes, exactly. We run the fantastic magic camp in Austin, Texas.
Right.
And yes, Magic Camp will be available next year at our convention.
So it really is going to have a focus towards children, I say youth, as well as the magic and weirdness in women.
Yep.
Okay. And Austin actually is called Music City in some ways.
It's the live music capital of the world.
Why did I say that?
Because there,
I always think of Nashville as being a magic or music capital.
No, there's magic. There's music going on in almost every bar in Austin.
That's true.
Even the buskers. Do you know that there are amplifiers on the street for people playing music
that you can just plug into?
Yes.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's kind of like, I guess, if you have an electric car, like in Alaska, you can plug in your car to keep it warm or something.
And the Austin magic community is doing our best to make it the live magic capital of the world, too.
Because you guys have street busking and everything. It seems like you had the Doc Seaton street performers
thing. And in July, we hosted Magic at the Capitol, two shows. We'll be doing that again next year in 2015. And Austin has the world-famous magic auction coming up in 2015, which will be on February 28th. We've got some really great auctioneers this year, Scott.
Who would that be, by the way?
That would be Scott Wells, David Hyra, Grant Walsh. And the website for that is up and running. It's AustinMagicAuction.com. We will start accepting items as soon as October 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a lot of magical
things. It's one of the world's largest magic auctions because of the money they've raised. It seems like in the past it's been like $20,000 to $25,000 worth of stuff that is sold.
Yeah, up to $30,000. And we make a lot of money for people wanting to get rid of some of stuff in their closets.
If you have some stuff that you think that is not worth something, actually it is. You'll find that we can raise some money and get something for that. I mean, if you don't want to take it to Potter and Potter Auction, I mean, take it to the Austin Auction.
Austin Auction. And you know, I'm sitting here thinking about all the wonderful things we have planned for this year. I want to tell you about the Bob Fitch. Is coming into 2015 TAOM. He's doing a lecture, a performance, and a special workshop. We also have John Carney.
Mm-hmm.
who will be doing a performance, a lecture, and a workshop, which will really be fun. And I don't know if you've heard about a fellow that wrote the book The Secret, Joe Vitale.
Oh, sure, yes.
Yes.
He's a big motivational speaker kind of fellow, yes, sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Guess what? He's going to be at our convention doing a lecture as well on the magic secret of increasing your business. So talk about motivation for making your magic business grow. This is the guy.
Right. Yeah, I know he lives in Houston or in Texas because at the magic auction, the Austin auction, he has come sometimes to bid on some things.
And right. I mean, he's been in three or four movies. He's got a half a dozen books out. He's a nationally sought out speaker. And
right.
Lives in the Hill, Texas Hill Country. We also have Brian Brushwood, who, as you know, is a nationally known
media mogul. It seems like a social media mogul, I should say.
And he's going to run a scam school for us.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun.
Wow. And these are just the things that you already have booked right now, and there's
right
more to come.
Right now. Yeah. I mean, we are 52 weeks out from September 4th through 7th, 2015.
Labor Day weekend, so you need to mark your calendars and plan for that and go to the website and get registered while the prices are low. That sounds like a great deal. Austin always has really great conventions. You know, that I would say that, you know, the way that the Texas Association of Magicians routes their conventions around Texas, that they would have them in Fort Worth, they'll have them in Dallas, in Austin, San Antonio, in Houston. They're going to be having them in Corpus Christi. We've had them in the past in Lubbock and in Tyler. But it seems like that Austin always has, you know, some of the
something
most,
different.
They do have something different, and it's consistently good and very well attended. And typically we have, gosh, the last time I think, 700 or so people, you know, or more, that were maybe 800. You know, we used to have into the thousands, but most conventions just don't have those kinds of numbers anymore in general.
I remember when TAOMs used to have 1,200.
Oh, sure. And Austin had 1,200.
Houston had 1,200.
We did have 1,200 in Houston when we were there.
But we've got a few more surprises up our sleeve, so maybe we'll have get back to the old figures.
Well, let's hope so. That'd be great. So maybe you should consider registering now while you get a great price on this. So I know it sounds like just I'm twisting your arm, but I'm telling you this is really going to be something that you want to do because Trixie Bond really has it all together. You guys know Trixie, of course, that she's been involved in magic for so many years. And, of course, what year was that when you were on the cover of Magic Magazine, by the way?
It's about 10 years ago.
Wow, time flies.
It does.
And, of course, being a national and world-renowned children's performer as you have been, and so now you're kind of turning your attention to try to make sure this is going to be a successful convention. I think it should be great.
Scott, this is going to be a full-time job.
Yeah.
Making
between
sure
now and then, you're focusing just on this.
That's right, because I'm kind of semi-retired from performing, so I'm dedicating my time to this TAOM convention and making it the best possible. I'm telling you, Austin has a great group of people to work with. We're all friends, and I intend to be friends in 53 weeks.
After it's all said and done.
Right. Right.
Thank you very much. That was Trixie Bond, there we go, for the TAOM in Austin next year, 2015. So it's Trixie Bond, and this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and it's still day four, and we just talked with Trixie Bond. You just heard talking about the Austin convention coming up, but also I thought I would talk with Scott Hollingsworth. You know, we have a lot of people talking about the Magic Island reopening, and I don't know that it will, and Scott Hollingsworth here was the entertainment director for a long number of years. Hello there, Scott.
Hey, Scott, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. Let me first of all congratulate you for the fact that now we're having the International Brotherhood of Magicians ring number 39 named after you, Scott Hollingsworth ring. Congratulations on that.
That's well, thank you very much. It came as a total surprise. I'm very humbled on the fact that so many of my peers felt like that the change would be necessary and that they chose me, that person.
Yeah.
Just unreal. Just
well deserved. Well, you have done so much, and we were just talking about the Magic Islands. We're all sitting here then right now that you were the entertainment director for how many years?
27 years.
Okay. And you had worked with everybody who had come and gone through there.
Yeah.
Who are some of the more memorable people that have come through the Magic Island you can think of, the acts and things?
Most all of them, like Kevin James, Vita Lupo, Tony Clark, Amos Litovich, Falkenstein.
Willards.
Blackstone Senior,
Junior,
Johnny Thompson. You can just go right down the list of all the
pretty much Lance Burton, everybody.
Lance Burton, yeah, all of those came through and really had a great time with all of them. It's like opening up the history books and looking back over it. You know.
Yeah, I imagine it really is. You know, I mean, you have such a long and varied history of working with the Magic Island and all the people who have come through there. You know, give me a couple of stories. You know, what are some of your most cherished recollections of something that you have enjoyed the island?
Oh boy, we could be here all night.
I got a little bit of time.
Yeah, I know. you caught me flat-footed on this,
man.
Yeah, have another scotch. just so many things. Let me get my thoughts on it. Which one would be the?
All right. Well, while you're thinking about that,
great.
I'm going to ask you about the Magic Island reopening, because there have been rumors from time to time about Dr. Atari perhaps reopening that. What do you think the chances are of that ever happening?
Personally, I don't think it will ever happen. That's my personal thinking.
Yeah.
However, Dr. Atari
could happen. Whatever.
It could happen.
Yeah.
He could open it tomorrow. I mean, first of all, he has the financial whereabouts to do that. He is right there at the property all the time. He owns the property next to it. So he could basically open it anytime he wanted to. But there's been no effort made to do some internal repairs that need to be done to make that happen.
The kitchen and
the kitchen.
Plus the mildew and mold and everything.
After 5 years now, 6 years of being closed, there's a lot of that would have to go in and be checked out and made back all the permits and the health standards and that. So I don't think that he's going to do it right immediately until that takes place.
Yeah. And so when you first got affiliated with it, what actually happened? How did they first contact you? Or did you contact them when you heard the island was going to open way back in the 80s, early 80s?
Well, they contacted me in regards to the fact that I was doing restaurant magic in the greater Houston area. And Michael Cayley called me and said, I understand you do restaurant magic in Houston. Would you be interested in helping us with a new restaurant that we're going to build in Houston? And I said, yes, I'd be more than happy to help you. If it's going to be a magic program, I'd like to be involved in it. He said, well, we'll get back in touch with you. And that was it. For 6 months, never heard another word from him at all. And then the next thing I know, he called and said, we're going to start doing some groundbreaking, and it's just about to happen, so I'm going to be in town, and let's have lunch.
Right.
And that's all how it started.
Because they had the Magic Island already as a
in Newport
successful.
Beach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's why I knew that it was going to be a legitimate thing, because they were talking about getting investors and making it all happen, and creating it just like the Newport Beach Magic Island.
And they were selling memberships, because back then it was a private club initially.
Right. Private club, just like the castle. And in doing so, they sold it at $1,500, $1,500, $1,500, and then
depending upon what
it was a different point. Levels of what people bought for. They had it broken down kind of should have had just two breakdowns, but they had about three breakdowns, and these allowed people to have wine at their tables. They could have two parties a month, they could have three parties a month, and it not, and it all covered their expenses, that type of thing. So it was really, I could go back and dig all that up, because it's I have all that information available. But right off, that was so long ago, you know, you're looking at 27 years ago.
Well, a little bit at a time. Yeah. Your office grew and grew, it got larger, and of course, initially people didn't send you videos. You actually booked people based upon recommendations and letters? Or
people sent me their little bio sheets along with a black and white 8x10, and that's basically what I was receiving from actually wanting to work, and it was all about referrals and follow-ups, guys appearing at different conventions, and the word say, you know, I'd call somebody up and say, did you go to the IBM convention, and did you see this certain act? And that's how I kind of kept building and building until I had a stable of guys that I could always fall back on. That
it seems like that you fell back mainly on cruise ship kind of guys because they could do a little bit of everything.
Yeah. That was the people that found out about Magic Island. Then it came to a point where they were calling me, and I didn't have to call them. Mm-hmm. You know, it was that. But there was that moment in time when Magic Island was just beginning, and people doubted that it would be open 6 weeks, you know, that type of mentality. Nothing could replace the castle, and why are we trying to replace the castle? Which I don't think that was ever the concept at all. But it took a period of a year and a half, 2 years, for the name to get out there to the performing professionals, and found out that they could use Magic Island as a stepping stone between conventions, getting into to the castle, back out of the castle, back out to cruise ships, and so it was
a place where they can perform and get a professional fee.
Right.
And back then, you also had a place for them to stay because you had a condo,
condos that they stayed,
and they get their meals and everything too.
And the price was right. It was at that time, it was a place where they made good money.
It paid more than what the Magic Castle
was paying. Because we paid for the rent, their travel, and paid them a good salary.
And they would work for 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Was it 4 weeks originally?
Well, 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks in
the
beginning.
Yeah, okay.
And, so
and you also had different acts. That is, you had like a furniture act or an illusion act and a comedy act. And then you also had a parlor area for a while over there in Clio.
Yeah. Back in those days when we had Clio,
Cleopatra's Chamber,
that's where the comedy guy worked, strictly comedy. On the main stage,
like Chuck Fain,
all the comedians that came through, Fielding West and
Earl Nelson
worked close up for us. He didn't work the stage; he worked Ramesses for us. The main theater had opening Manipak, and then basically the
and you emceed it.
Yeah, and then the second part of the show was an illusion act.
Okay.
Props, furniture type show. And that was the format. We had actually three different types of stand-up shows and in two close-up showrooms. And so had a lot of magic, lots and lots of magic there. And it wasn't until changes began to take place, and economy changed, all that, that we had to restructure the whole setup.
So eventually they closed Cleopatra's Chamber and made that into a banquet facility.
Yeah.
And this had two close-up rooms.
And then I put a Manip Act opening or an illusion act, 12-minute act, and then MC about 5 or 6 minutes in between, and then brought out the comedy act. It would be a comedy illusion
like
act
or something.
A Kerry Pollack type of act.
Brett Daniels.
Ricky Dunn.
Ricky Dunn.
All these guys came
Vic
through.
Vic Kirk.
Yeah, all of them who had a couple of illusions in their show, but had added comedy.
Yeah.
But in front of them, that 12 to 13 minutes was Bird Axe and Manip Axe, you know. And they basically, it worked that way for many, many years. And it worked, it was a good show, real good shows. And Magic Island just blossomed. I mean, it was just really off the charts. And the owner, Dr. Tari, made a lot of money.
So now you've had a chance to think about a few other stories.
Oh, I got some great stories. I just don't know
how many you can tell.
Yeah, I can tell them because basically I don't want the axe who I'm going to talk about to think that I'm trying to insult them in any kind of way or something like that. So let me do that another time.
we'll think about that.
Yeah, another time.
Yeah. So as far as with the Magic Island getting closed in 2008, and that you said that it's probably, you're in my belief both, that probably won't open under the current scenario the way that it is. If anything, it's probably a teardown facility and have to rebuild. Now, has it been resold? It seems like I've heard it's changed hands one or two times since then. Is that true or not? Or
I've heard that real estate property has been sold, but there's no evidence of it. They've made no changes to the building.
Yeah.
You drive by it I drive by it three or four times a week, and there's no changes at all in the appearance of the building.
And to your knowledge, all of the interior property is still there. In other words,
everything,
all the posters, the pictures, mm-hmm. the props,
yeah.
Everything is still there pretty much.
Still there. Yeah, just can't get in there. Yeah, they just won't allow you to go in.
It's all locked up.
It's all locked up.
And Anne White's photos and all that stuff is all in
that's
there.
All that's in there, yeah.
And that is owned by whoever buys or whoever owns it currently.
Yeah.
And it was Atari and so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I understand, I have heard rumors that Banachek and I think it's Robert Smith is interested.
Yeah, I think that's who he is. Yeah. I just think it's just a great concept that he's going to have.
Oh, and place in Webster, Texas.
Yeah, Webster.
Which is south of Houston.
Right, right there by NASA.
The
Great Space Center is at. And I think that they're planning for it. They're working on the details. I think they're taking the right steps on getting all their finance together before they do anything.
Yeah.
And I think that that's wise, very, very wise, with that kind of a project that they've got in mind.
Right.
It's a big project, and I'm praying that it gets off the ground.
I hope so, too. It's a proven track record. I mean, the island has certainly worked here for 25 years.
Yeah. The Magic is established in Houston, and it's a situation that they should do well, because the Magic is there. People call all the time asking about Magic Island.
Yeah.
Where can I go to see a good magic show, or where can I take people, and that type of interest and concerns.
Well, you're certainly still getting shows today. I mean, people are saying that you are the Magic Island entertainment director.
I get shows all the time because of it.
Yeah.
At least once or twice a month I'll get a show on a corporate event that is basically results of Magic Island and knowing me from Magic Island days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not marketed into them. They just think, well, why don't we get the magician of Magic Island? Who do we remember? And it's me.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, luckily, because my name is Scott also, they'll say, oh, Scott, I remember you from the Magic Island. I'll say, that's me.
That's me.
I'll take that show.
Yeah.
Or if it's not, if I've got something else. No, you're talking about Scott Hollingsworth.
Yeah.
I'm not available, but he is. He's the guy.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. That's fine. Well, listen, Scott, thank you very much.
Well, thank you
very much.
I
appreciate you talking about it, because a lot of people have been interested in what's going on and what the status is of Magic Island. So appreciate you talking about
it. Well, this year's TAOM convention has just been outstanding, and these last 4 days have just been great. They've had a lot of great entertainment.
What's been a highlight for you? What have you done?
The highlight for me was naturally Max Howard. I just feel like that he has so much to offer Magic in the Magic world, with all of his theatrical background and the experience of theater work. We as magicians need to have that kind of information.
Right.
The other person was Master Payne. I think that he basically brought a great enlightenment to people with his style of comedy.
Very funny.
And his viewpoints on the world of magic, which I just love. That
I heard you cackling back.
Oh, yeah.
Your laughter.
Yeah. I just really think he's a funny, funny man. And he's right on with all of his concepts.
Right.
Yeah. great guy. And Kevin James did a wonderful show tonight. His standard show, just wonderful. I think that Invisible Man project that he's working on, quite different, going to really, really be an addition to his show.
Yeah. I think anybody's going to have an opportunity to see Kevin James and the rest of the Illusionists perform anywhere near your city, you should make the pilgrimage to go and see that show. That's going to be awesome. When you stop and think, it's Kevin plus Jeff Hobson and all the rest of the guys who are going to be working with that. It'll be a great show.
It'll be a great show. Yeah. Wonderful show.
I'm glad they're coming to Houston next June.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You and me can go together?
We can go together.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll talk later.
Good. That was Scott Hollingsworth for the Magic Court Podcast. Scotty out. Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and as I said earlier, this is day four, and it's the conclusion of the convention. It's 12 noon, and so it's now officially over. We just had the Diamond Jim Tyler lecture, and that was really good. And I have with me one of the performers, the talent, Steve Bedwell. Hi there, Steve.
Hey, Scott.
It's good to see you then here, and also it's been a while since you've actually been at a magic convention and performing, isn't it?
Yes, it's been 12 years.
So what have you been doing? Where have you been? Now, I mean, I know, but the rest of the listening audience may not understand.
I've been figuring out how to make a living using magic. So I've been involved with professional speaking.
And you completely turned this around, which I think was interesting. You and I talked about this, I think, at the Mindvention some time ago.
We did.
In which that you were talking about being a magician or a medical doctor, I guess, and then doing magic, but you kind of turned that around. Just explain a little bit what you, how you changed what you did and what you're doing.
Well, what I'm thrilled about now is I get to combine my three passions, my passion for magic, my fascination with all things scientific and academic, and my love of comedy. So it's like the three legs on a stool. I get to do all three, and I love doing that. And the only way I could find to incorporate all those three elements was professional speaking. And it's kind of funny because people always, in the magic community, always think about, oh, well, the reason people go into speaking, it's like people used to go into trade shows years ago. It's because they see it as a, a higher bracket of income.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, it's really, for me, it's not primarily that. It's just this combination of these three things, the magic, the comedy, and an opportunity to draw on my academic background to talk to people about emotional intelligence, changing their habits, and so forth.
Right. But you found a whole different market when you had a different mindset, because you were trying to market yourself as a magician, but then when you start marketing to doctors.
Yes.
And so explain a little bit about that.
Well, not just doctors, just
to
be clear, not just doctors.
Okay.
I speak to all kinds of groups. Obviously, a lot of healthcare groups because of my medical background.
Yes.
But all kinds of groups. In fact, this year I've spoken to the Dairy Farmers Association, and an organization that were responsible for railway tracks for locomotives. So all kinds of groups, but obviously with a focus on healthcare, because, you know, the trick is to choose the easiest path and to follow the, to get in front of a parade that's already in motion.
Yes.
Trying to sell something new is tough, but to solve a situation or get involved with a situation that's already ongoing is a lot easier.
Yeah, in my particular case, I've been involved in the energy business for a long number of years, and when I started doing magic full-time, then I went, obviously, with my strength. And so it's easier for me to work within the energy business. One thing, they do have money, you know, in the in that sector, just like healthcare would as well. But then also, I don't have to learn a whole new set of terms. I mean, the same with you.
Absolutely, yeah. And it helps immeasurably to be able to walk in and have credibility from the get-go.
Right.
And frankly, when I'm on the phone with a prospect, the subject of magic may never come up. I may have an hour-long call with a prospect or with somebody that's that has already hired me, but they want to talk about their meeting, and the subject of magic will never come up, even though I use a lot of magic and mentalism in my speeches.
Right, right. Do you find, though, that you're doing less magic and more speaking, as opposed to before you were kind of doing a lot of magic, or...
Well, for the last 12 years, I've done exclusively speeches.
Yes.
It occurred to me just the other day, I hadn't asked someone to pick a card in over 10 years.
Wow, okay.
That's changed now because of this convention.
Yes.
But up until that point, it was like, my goodness. And it's not that I wasn't doing magic. It's just that I was doing very specific pieces within the context of a speech. And of course, the other thing was, whereas in the past, when I was working magic conventions, it was all about stuff that was specifically designed to engage magicians.
Yes.
Back in the corporate and association market, it's about choosing material which reinforces the academic points I want to make.
Right, right. And so you've obviously found a great little niche, you know, for yourself.
Yes.
You know, and this is just going to be taking you on. And the great thing about this is you can do it for as long as you have your health, I guess, you know, basically.
Well, and funny enough, that's not a minor point. You know, as we all age, I think I never wanted to get to the point where somebody looked at me and it was like getting a little sad, like this older guy doing, you know, comedy magic tricks or whatever.
Yep.
And within the speaking world, of course, as you age, your credibility increases.
Because you have this perceived knowledge base that you can call upon your years of experience.
That's the perception, yeah. And, of course, it's true, too. As we get older, we have more experience. But certainly the perception of a speaker is very different from the perception of a magician.
Right.
And it's not that one's better than the other, but it's just for me personally, as I get older, it felt more comfortable to be within the speaking as an academic person rather than trying to come across purely as a magician.
But a magician should not jump into the speaking market, if you will, just because they think, okay, this is where the money is.
Well, I think that's the biggest trap of all.
Exactly.
I really do. You know, people did that with trade shows.
Yeah.
I think folks are trying that with speaking, and a lot of them are finding it extremely tough. Mm-hmm. Because people want value. You know, they want take-home. If you're presenting yourself as a speaker, people want to leave after your speech with something they didn't know before, something that's relevant to them and can change them professionally and personally.
Are you finding that that's also devaluing the market a little bit because some people coming in who don't have the experience and saying, hey, I'll do this for less? No?
Okay. I don't think that. No, because, no, these are markets with bigger budgets. And I think we all find a level, you know, and what's a high fee for one person won't be for someone else.
Sure.
And what would be a high fee for me, for somebody further on and more with more prominence, it wouldn't be a high fee at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we all find our own particular level.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so now that you have done this convention, are you planning on coming back and doing some more?
Loved it. Yeah. This was kind of strange because the interesting thing for me is I didn't want to come back and do the stuff I was doing 12 years ago and 15 years ago, you know, the Gold Cups Act and all that stuff, now I look back on it, it was way too influenced by Tom Mullica, way too influenced by David Williamson.
Mm-hmm.
There was this kind of zaniness that I don't think was me. And so actually the challenge for me coming back into magic was to bring my speaking experience into it and to be presenting myself as I am. And so I'm doing magic that's completely congruent with what I could do in a speech and how I present myself in a speech, and that at the same time is a magic show and not a speech, because they're very different things.
Absolutely.
And
keep your personality in this as well.
So you
engage with the audience and they know more about you.
Exactly. And to be using material that's unique to me, not only the tricks, but also the lines I'm using, you know, the various gags that talk about me as a physician and my background, and tying all that in, and my accent and the fact I'm bald and all these things that tie together. As we discussed in the lecture, this idea that if you watch a sitcom, say The Big Bang Theory, a line that is hilarious when Sheldon says it would have absolutely no impact if Leonard said it, and similarly with the other characters. Mm-hmm. You know, sitcom writers write to the character.
Correct.
And if you compare that with magic acts, how often do you see a magician, even a funny magician, who's using a bunch of lines that would fit another magician number two and magician
generic
number
magician.
Three. Yeah, just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean to say they aren't funny. Mm-hmm. And I think the challenge for us as we mature as performers, you know, the first challenge is, right, we go from non-entertaining to becoming entertaining. And that's when we're chasing the laughs, you know, and we're just looking for anything that's funny and fits the routine. Then I think the next step in our evolution is to start saying, well, you know, this is funny, and this does get big laughs, but it doesn't actually fit me, and it doesn't move an audience's understanding of who I am further forward.
Right.
And I find that a really interesting thing. It's like, yeah, this is funny, but does it give the audience a sense of who I am? Because my goal is, at the end of a speech or a magic show, that they do have that sense of, they know something about me as a person that they didn't know when they walked into the room.
Right. Right, and I think that that's what's very important. That Ben Jackson just lectured to our club recently, and he was pointing out something that Penn and Teller or Penn was talking about, and he said, when I go to a magic show, one of the few things that he wants to get from that is I want to learn a new word. He said, I'd like to also know something about this person who is performing. And I think that's the best way, Steve. What you're talking about is you do learn something about that person if they are sharing something from their soul, as opposed to just telling a hack line,
Right? Or even not a hack line. There can be a wonderfully written line, that just doesn't suit a particular individual.
That's
and of course,
true.
It's massively frustrating when you come up with something that's really funny, but when you look at it in the cold light of day, it just doesn't fit the personality of the person who's written.
I was talking to Dana Daniels about this very thing because he had a great lecture.
And he did.
And one of the things that we were talking about was how that when he was with the Long Beach Mystics, that they would kind of share ideas with each other.
Yes.
And that, they would say, okay, well, here's something, kind of tweak your act this way or the other. But also, that when they're kind of together, that they will have a line that would be, that he'll be thinking about this other person's like, I think this will fit for you.
Yes.
And then later it's like, well, maybe this will fit, for me just fine also. Or maybe I'll save this. But he's, you're thinking about other people, because you realize that this guy has this kind of character and it would, or woman, that it would play better for you if you, something that Jeff Hobson would say that's very funny would not work, for Michael Finney, or somebody.
No.
They're both comedians and they both have their same style.
Sure.
So you
absolutely
just need to find your own personality.
Yeah.
And
I have to say, I thought Dana's idea of having a round table of magicians that get together was an excellent one. I actually made a note of it, and it's an idea I'm hoping to take back to Orlando, where I live now, because that's another community with a large base of experienced professional magicians.
Yeah.
So the idea of a bunch of us getting together and brainstorming lines and routines, I thought that was a fantastic suggestion.
Great idea. Well, I know we've got to wrap up over here, and you got to get back then as well. So the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so my question to you then, Steve, what is your magic word? Or what is, could be a phrase, could be a sentence, something that you live by. What's important to you? What do you live by when you wake up in the morning? What gets you going? What's exciting? What's meaningful to you?
I think the three things we all search for are simplicity, control, and transformation.
I feel like I'm at one of your speeches now. You're talking about
the Hey, you asked the question.
I did. So you,
I believe those are key things.
Okay.
We want life to be simpler. We want to take control, and we're looking to change.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping. That's what I think about every day, and that's what I'm trying to move forward with.
Wow, well, I think you can accomplish it.
May I just say one other thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've actually just set up a website of my own. I completely, literally the day before we came to the convention.
Okay.
And then like an idiot, I forgot to mention it in the lecture.
So please do here, because we got, several dozens of listeners around the world.
Your friends and relatives.
That's right.
The name of the website is stevebedwellmagic.com.
Okay.
stevebedwellmagic.com. It's a brand new website. There's just the one message to it at the moment. The intention was to present it to the TAO members, but as I say, I completely forgot. And there's a little form that if people want to sign up, they can get ongoing news and ideas from me, including I've been using Harry Robson's roughing stick, which I think is way
better. I just bought one of those yesterday.
It's awesome.
I'm anxious
it's
to try it.
Awesome.
Because I've been using the Tester's Dull Coat,
me
like
too.
Everybody else, forever.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I have to redo it. I use an invisible deck so many times, and strolling, I now have to redo that deck about every 3 weeks.
Exactly, especially the card on top, right?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was in exactly the same boat. And the cool thing about Harry Robson's stick is not only can you, it's very precise in the way you apply it, but if you find that one of the cards is wearing out, you can redo it on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
So the product is great.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't feel the instructions for the product are as good as they could be.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is just putting together a few page white paper, maybe 3 or 4 pages white paper, explaining to people exactly how I use the roughing stick to prepare up invisible decks for close up and stand up and so forth.
Yeah.
So that's available to folks. It's completely free if they just sign up for the newsletter.
Good.
So stevebedwellmagic.com. I think we're done.
I think we are.
Scott.
Thank you, Steve, very much. That's been wonderful, and safe travels.
Thank you. You too.
For the Magic Word Podcast. That was Steve Bedwell. Scotty out.
For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook
and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.